Welcome to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdoyle. You'll find me on Twitter at C70. With me, always, Tara Wellman. You will find her at Tara Wellman over on Twitter. Tara, it was another pretty good week for Cardinal baseball. It was a very uneven week in the fact that they seemed to play like every other day, with Mother Nature getting a few rainouts in there. And then they won a lot of games. They lost a couple. They're sitting right at 500. And I guess if you were to tell us 2 weeks ago that the Cardinals would make it to 500 before the end of April, we'd have probably been pretty excited. But when you see them lose a game like they did today, it's a little bit disappointing, taking a little bit of a bitter taste into May, isn't it?
It is, and I think it's interesting how quickly the tide turns, because just a few days ago, we were celebrating the Cardinals getting back to 500, and then today, falling back to 500 seemed like the worst thing ever. So I guess that's good in the sense that we have seen enough positive things in the last couple of weeks to reestablish some level of expectation for this team. But then to watch them lose like they did today, it sort of reaffirms what some of the major concerns are at this point, whether it's fundamentals on the base running side or the defensive side, or the fact that as improved as the offense has been in the last week, it can still look pretty ice cold at times. And, when you can only score in it, really, when you can only get something going in one inning, because the first run today wasn't really at the hand of the Cardinals bats, you're going to put yourself in a tough situation, especially when you have a bullpen that is struggling to find, any sort of stability. So it's nice to see the wins. It's nice to see them, sure, back to that 500 mark, but I think even more significantly, really right back in the mix, just a couple of games at most back from the division leaders and the Chicago Cubs, depending on how their Sunday night game shakes out with the Red Sox tonight. So that seems to be as significant of a jump in the last week and a half as anything. And, you kind of take the first month for what it was and move on from there.
Yeah, I mean, if the Cardinals had won today and the Cubs had lost tonight, they would have gone into May tied for first in the division, which is just insane to think about given the start that they had. But, you're getting a month under your belt. It really kind of starts to lessen this idea that it's early. That's one-sixth of the season pretty much taken care of. You can start to draw a few conclusions, and it seems like one of the conclusions that we can draw fairly confidently is that for all the talk this offseason of a better base running and a better defensive team, this team is not that. This team is not a team that is going to be ever confused with a gold glove team. This is a team that is never going to be confused with the 82 Cardinals. You and I had a little bit of a discussion on Twitter today trying to figure out just exactly which base runner is the worst for the Cardinals, and that is a difficult decision to make because there are just so many bad ones. You know, I went down on the line of Matt Carpenter because it seems like Matt Carpenter is always doing something on the bases that results in outs, and today's was a big one, going home from third with nobody out and getting beaten by a significant margin. I've never really cared for the contact play, and that apparently was what was going on. You lean towards Stephen Piscotty, though. The man of being caught four times this year already, you may have a case. Why don't you make it?
Well, I think for me it's more a case of it seems to me when Matt Carpenter makes a decision to take an extra base or try to score on a contact play, he at least is decisive in that. It may be a bad decision, but he's confident in the decision that he's made. When I'm watching Stephen Piscotty this year on the base paths, he just looks so hesitant every time he rounds a base, whether he's taking an extra lead and then gets caught leaning off of first, or if, like today, he... what I can only assume was a failed hit and run, the second of the two-game series between him and Yadier Molina, almost an identical play, except today he actually fell trying to get back to first base. So that made it look a little more unfortunate. But he just looks like he's caught in the middle. And you talk about that with a guy at the plate who can't make up his mind about whether or not to swing, but that's what it looks like with Stephen Piscotty on the base paths. So for me, you know, if we're really having the conversation about which runner is the worst at this point, it's probably a toss-up, but at least Matt Carpenter is decisive, and to some degree, I think you can respect his commitment to the decision, but Stephen Piscotty just looks like he's stuck in no man's land and doesn't really know one way or the other what was the better choice.
You know, there still seems to be a pretty vocal segment of Cardinal fans that want the return of the running Redbirds. But, you know, I think it feels like with this team, you know, maybe barring Dexter Fowler, and, you know, I'd like to think Colton Wong could do it, but we've seen enough out of him this year that maybe not so much. It feels like these guys should stay on the base. I mean, I'm not even talking about leading off. I mean,
right.
We have seen, what, four pickoffs at second base, which is, I've watched baseball for like 20 years plus, and I probably haven't seen four pickoffs in that whole entire time at second base. And we have seen four pickoffs in a month, less than a month. It's amazing. I mean, I think when every time you start to exaggerate what this team can do on the base paths, they go out and prove that you're understating things. So I don't know. It feels like there's only so much, you know, training. There's only so much times that, so many times that Ozzie Smith or Willie McGee or any of these people that, you know, could run can come tell these guys how to steal bases before you just got to say, look, we're going to play station to station, maybe occasionally first to third, because this is the best way we can do it to not run ourselves out of innings. Because as you said, the offense is not, it's better, but it's not really, really clicking. And to lose so many run outs on the base pass, it's just dangerous.
Well, it's far too costly. You cannot, there's an argument to be made for being aggressive and making the opponent make the play to get you out. But it's not even that. They're just not, it looks reckless, not like it's aggressive in a good way. And I think it's one thing to say you want that kind of team, especially for Cardinals fans who've seen that kind of team be so successful. You know, you talk about the Ozzie Smith era, you talk about Whitey Ball, you talk about that style of play that was exciting without being the home runs and, you know, the big innings because of, you know, the power bats. And the Cardinals, as an organization, have had success with both of those kinds of play. I think that they are aware of the fact that this roster makeup isn't going to be the kind of team that has, you know, the Albert Pujols, Walker, Edmonds, Rolen type down the middle. They're just not that team. So they're trying to compensate with another method of creating offense. And that's great if you have that kind of roster, but they don't. Mm-hmm. They don't have that roster either. So they're still, in a different way, trying to, you know, force a square peg into a round hole. And that's, that never works, and it always results in things looking more dysfunctional than they could be if you just take what this team has to offer for whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And if that's station to station, I mean, you have enough double hitters on this team that if you just flip-flop doubles, you're going to score a lot of runs. Mm-hmm. We've seen them do that. Doesn't have to be home runs. It doesn't have to be stolen bases. Yeah, if you have a guy that can go first to third on a base hit, then that's great. But if you just let these guys hit line drives in the gap and rotate doubles, then they're going to be fine without trying to get too fancy on the bases. And that seems to be when they get themselves into the most trouble at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, it's not even, you know, they get beat on a close play or on a tag play. I mean, there's so many times we've seen guys be beat by, you know, it's like the major league where the guy's got the ball and just kind of waves at the runner to come on in, you know, because it's beaten the throw by so much. I think those are the decisions that you just wish that they would do better. And then on the defensive side, again, we kind of thought that maybe, you know, Diaz was going to look better. You know, Matt Carpenter being at one place and the place that perhaps he could do the less damage. There was a lot of thought that this team wasn't going to be amazing in the field, but it would be solid. And yet we've seen them lose games at least twice this week, basically because of the shoddy defense. And that's the only two games they lost this week. Is there any hope for this team to get better that way, or is it just going to be that they're going to have to figure out a way to outslug their opponent because they're not going to be able to catch the ball?
Well, I think there's certainly the chance for them to get better. I mean, Diaz is still young in his career, and I think that he's still learning. You can see him almost making mental notes of the ways different plays went wrong, which is not necessarily something you want to see all the time. But I do think that he's learning. He's still growing. He's finding his own rhythm in the field. And I think that it's fair to expect him to continue to grow and continue to learn. I don't think it's fair to expect him to be Ozzie Smith, but you know, I think that there's room for improvement there, and it's fair to expect that of him. As far as, you know, guys like Matt Carpenter, it was interesting. There was a play in today's game where essentially he should have been the cutoff man and he was out of position, which made it seem like Colton Wong was out of position. And I don't know exactly where everyone was. I didn't see a replay of the exact play, but, you know, there were questions asked in the post game about Matt Carpenter knowing where he needed to be on some of those plays. And he got a little defensive and said, well, I've played the position before. I know where I'm supposed to be. And that's great, but we're not really seeing that be the case. We're not seeing any sort of spectacular range from anyone. You know, we're still seeing Colton Wong was very impressive in today's game defensively, but he's the kind of guy that just moves too fast sometimes and he's going to make mistakes. So to some degree, I think it is, they are who they are, but I don't think they are, when they're at their best, the team that's going to make four errors a game, and that doesn't include the number of plays not made that were not counted as errors that then cost extra pitches for either their starters or the bullpen that continues to struggle. So, I mean, I don't know if it's fair to expect them to drastically improve, but they need to.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, they need to do something. Because as much as you'd like to say the pitching is good on overall, but it's still got to be supported, and we saw that today. Mike Leake goes out and throws five scoreless innings, gives a run, turns it over to a bullpen that's been fairly solid, and then between the bullpen and the defensive miscues, the lead evaporates. We've seen Matt Bowman be a little bit more human this week. Is that law of averages, or is that the fact that his arm's about to fall off?
Well, I think there have been enough off days, whether it's because of the weather or because of the scheduling, that even though he's pitched a lot, I would like to think that at 1 month in, he's not completely overused yet. But I would also suggest that he was far overperforming the expectations coming into the season, so it's really not that far off to see him come back down to earth a little bit. I think the struggle is going to be when he's the only reliable arm in the bullpen, to see him maybe look a little human now and then is going to seem far more dramatic than it really would be otherwise. So it just means somebody else in the bullpen is going to have to step up. I mean, there are a lot of concerns for me in the bullpen right now that are more about almost more about health than anything. Because as we're hearing, everyone's fine. What we're seeing is telling a different story. So Matt Bowman is a guy that this team is going to need to continue to do his thing, but we also can't be surprised when you know, he gets beat up every now and then, whether it's because he's pitched every other day that week or because he's trying to hold his own as best he can out there, but this isn't necessarily the guy that he was supposed to be.
And, you know, it seems like about the time we get a fairly confident read on some of these pitchers, they go out and upend things, and that's what Trevor Rosenthal did today. I think everybody had kind of gotten to this idea that Rosenthal was back and that he was going to be a lockdown guy, and then he goes out today, gives up two hits, two walks, and the game-winning run is in that mix. Now, again, could be just a bad day, probably is, but when you've seen Rosenthal's history, it's you never want to see those kind of days, and unfortunately we did. Is this just a blip, you think?
Rosenthal's actually one of the guys that I am a little bit concerned about, and it's not because of what we've seen on the mound other than today, because he's looked pretty incredible when he's been out there. But the fact that they've been so cautious and the fact that he's been unavailable so many days in a row, I have a hard time believing that he's physically where he needs to be the crucial piece of that bullpen mix that that he was penciled in to be. So I don't know that it's anything to be as concerned about as I am, but I guess with the history, with what we saw last year and how long it took to identify any sort of injury or physical problem that was the reason for the poor results, I'm hesitant to buy in to what we've seen out of Trevor Rosenthal outside of his outing today. So I guess I say that because, you know, he goes out there today and walks the first batter on four pitches, and my first thought is, yeah, he's probably hurt. and that's not really the mindset anyone wants to have about a guy that's as good as Trevor Rosenthal, especially, you know, when his last appearance, I think he hit 102 on the gun. So it's a weird sort of balance with Trevor Rosenthal right now, trying to figure out why he's more sore than normal or how they can prevent some of that, and how to make sure that he's still pitching enough to stay sharp. You know, when you're only available every 4 or 5 days as a reliever, it's not giving you a whole lot of a routine. And we've seen Rosenthal is the kind of guy that needs that. So you'd like to think that today was just a bad day. I will say, from what I saw, the strike zone got particularly small in that inning. I believe in that inning, I counted at least 6 pitches that were called balls that were very much strikes. And that would have changed the dynamic of that whole inning. So things like that happen. You can't read too much into it, but it was pretty undeniable to be a little uncomfortable with how much like last season Rosenthal looked today.
You do point out a very good point that Rosenthal has yet to go on back-to-back days. And this idea that he was going to be this multi-inning Andrew Miller type is completely out the window. And it is very strange to see that you do wonder, because this is a guy that, you know, the extra workload is not huge. I mean, we've seen Trevor Rosenthal go multiple innings in the past, so it's not like he's not capable of it, but that is not what the Cardinals are doing this year. I mean, he has thrown every outing except for the second one against the Nationals has been of a one-inning affair. It's going to be interesting to see if they can't stretch that out. Now, you know, you never know. I mean, you could sit him in the bullpen and let him, you know, have make friends with Tyler Lyons, since neither one of them seems to get in that often. But I don't know. I think that's interesting, and you're right. There may be some health issues that we're really going to have to watch. Because it's a Cardinal pitcher, so that's what's going to happen. We saw good starting pitching. We saw Adam Wainwright get past the fifth inning for the first time this season, even though there was some debate about whether he should have or not. It still feels like Adam Wainwright's still the fifth starter of this team right now, and it's very difficult to see how that changes, isn't it?
It is, and I think the only way it changes is if Adam Wainwright changes. Mm-hmm. And I've said this before, but I think that Adam Wainwright has said, well, if I need to change how I pitch, then I will, but I'm not going to until I need to. Well, I'm not sure what he thinks that looks like, but I think we're there. I think that he's not going to be able to do things the way that he did 3 or 4 years ago. He's not going to be able to do things the way that he did. He's not going to be able to have the same expectations of himself that he had when he was at the peak of his career. And that's okay. There are a lot of guys who were number one starters for most of their career who essentially reinvented themselves to keep themselves relevant and were just fine. They were able to be critical pieces of their teams, even if the definition of the role was a little bit different. I think that's where Adam Wainwright needs to be willing to go with himself. And we saw in, you know, two starts ago, he looked much sharper. He wasn't able to repeat that sharpness the next time out. And the thing that's the most different with Waino is that those innings cost him so many extra pitches that he's not used to throwing that then he's not going to be the guy that can throw a complete game shutout and turn around 5 days later and go eight innings again. And, you know, in theory, that's okay. I think right now he's feeling the pressure of the lackluster bullpen and trying to do what Adam Wainwright always does and be the guy that goes out and fixes everything. Mm-hmm. But he can't necessarily take on that role and do it effectively at this point. So I would be happy to see Adam Wainwright go 5-6 innings is great and do that well rather than trying to stretch it out and end up throwing too many pitches right over the plate.
Yeah, and that seems to be, I mean, his game this week, he could have easily left after five because he was at 80-something pitches, I think, there, closing it on 90. And thankfully, it didn't come back to bite because it felt like that was what was going to happen. The game was only, I think, a two-run game at the time. He put a runner on in the seventh, and you just felt like, or maybe even the sixth, you just felt like things were going to go out of hand, and they didn't, thankfully. But you're right, Adam Wainwright's got to adjust. He's got to be, I mean, kind of pulling up Bob Gibson's numbers here just to see how he did it at his end of his career. And, you know, Gibson was Gibson for the most part. But even he, you know, I mean, he went and pitched, you know, he struck out 200 batters for the last time in 1972. In 73 and 74, he was significantly less on the strikeouts and a little bit different type of pitcher. And still was very effective for the last couple of years. So it can happen. It always does. I mean, the fireballers always change into something else, and the curveball doesn't curve. You've got to adjust, and we'll see how Wainwright does. But hopefully the bullpen will be strong enough to make him not think that he has to be this hero of the whole piece and has to get everything fixed on his own. You know, the Cardinals, again, they're sitting right there at the brink of the division. They've been fortunate that nobody has played real well, and they've got what in theory looks like a softer schedule coming up as they've gone through some of those opponents. This time around they have the Brewers as the month starts. They got the four with the Brewers starting tomorrow. Then they go to Atlanta and they go to Miami. There's a chance for the Cardinals to really look pretty good getting into mid-May when the season really seems to be solid. I mean, this is when you're really talking about this is what this team is. Is this a kind of a pretty good week for the Cardinals to put up some runs, to put up some wins?
I think it's an important week because the last thing you want to do after scraping and clawing to get to that 500 mark is drop right back off the cliff. This is a team that can't afford too many of those dramatic swings. And, you know, you hear them talk about it. You listen to them, as far as the players are concerned, address the issue of the way the season started, and they're not concerned, which I think is a good, they're not publicly concerned. I'll clarify. They're not going to admit to being concerned. But you really don't want them to. You don't want them to buy into a 3-9 start and think, well, that's who we are. I guess that's what the season's going to be. So for them to get back to this point is great, but now it's all about sustaining that and continuing to improve, continuing to cut down on those errors, making sure that the spark that you saw out of the top of the order in the last week isn't just a 1 week thing. You know, these guys are starting to see the ball better. They're making better contact. Those sorts of things are great, but now they need to stop running into outs on the bases and do some of those things more consistently. So this is an important week to continue the progress of the last 2 weeks and to try to solidify themselves as a team that's going to be better than they showed at the start of the year, even if it's going to be in a different way than teams like the Cubs or the Nationals or the Red Sox are going to be good this year.
Before we wrap it up for this week, we have to talk at least about, there's a number of former Cardinals in the news this week, with David Freese going on the disabled list, which is a pretty good blow to the Pirates. As Shelby Miller going under the knife, having Tommy John surgery. He'll be out for the season, obviously, and Diamondbacks, he was looking pretty good for the Diamondbacks this year. They're going to miss him. But all that is pales into the fact that the Rangers were able to pick up Pete Cosma off waivers. And not only did they pick up Pete Cosma, they activated Pete Cosma and sent Jurickson Profar down to the minors. So Jurickson Profar, the guy that 2 or 3 years ago people were clamoring to trade Oscar Tavares for, just got replaced by Pete Cosma. I don't know what to say to that. Now, you're the vice president of the Pete Cosma fan club, so I'm going to leave this to you and explain what that really, really means.
Even as the vice president of the Pete Cosma fan club, I'm having a really hard time coming up with too many things for a baseball player worse than being replaced by Pete Cosma. I just don't know if that's, I don't know where you go from there as a guy who was a top prospect just a few years ago. I mean, obviously guys struggle, and we've seen a number of the Cardinals' young prospects. I mean, you know, look at some of them now. I mean, we just finished talking about Stephen Piscotty really struggling in a number of ways this year, but to get to that level and to be struggling significantly enough that Pete Cosma, the guy who we spent an entire season trying to find enough defensive contribution to make up for the fact that I'm pretty sure I could hit as well as he did, when that guy replaces you, That's a rough day at the office, to be sure.
I mean, there are people that would have resigned or retired right there on the spot if that happened to them. I mean, that's like, I don't know what that is. I mean, you know, that's, you know, even worse than, you know, Mike Matheny managing Colton Wong. I mean, that's just, it's just bad. I don't know. And hopefully, go ahead.
I will say, props to Pete Cosma for being the guy that just won't go away. I mean, it takes a lot to hang in there when you bounce around from team to team and never quite know where the next month of your life is going to lead you. And look at him now, finding himself on another big league roster.
That's right. And I mean, that's kind of what the former Cardinal shortstops do. I mean, Brendan Ryan, you know, bounced around for a while. Heck, the Yankees had Brendan Ryan and Pete Cosma in their organization at the same time.
I don't know how cosmos didn't collapse on itself
Yeah,
at that
I mean, and I don't know how they didn't, like, no-hit everybody. I mean, if you
point.
put both of those guys out in the field, I mean, they're going to catch everything that's out there. So, I don't
Maybe
know.
that's what the Cardinals need.
Maybe, yeah, I mean.
Just get them both back.
Okay, so Tara is now advocating for Pete Cosmo to be returned to shortstop. Yeah, I don't think I
Hey,
want
you
to go
said you wanted to improve the
there.
defense.
That would that is true. That would improve the defense. That might.
I didn't say it would improve anything else.
Yeah, I don't know that that's the direction we really want to go. So, let's. I just don't think Twitter can handle that again.
Well, you know, Jerks and Profar might be available soon, so
Yeah, and it probably will
that's an
not
option.
cost nearly as much as it would have 3 years ago.
The Rangers need a third baseman because we got one of those sitting around.
Yeah, we got a bunches of them just hanging around. We even got a first baseman that can double as an outfielder. So you
Those
never
are
know.
rare. Those are rare.
I can't even think of the last time I saw one like that. So anyway, it was interesting to see. That's a combination that we never would have thought just a couple of years ago that could ever come to fruition. And yet, that's the way baseball goes. I mean, that's where we've seen there are some times where that veteran presence, and that's what Pete Cosma is now, and a solid glove can get you a backup role where a young guy needs a little bit more help in the minors. So, probably not the end of Profar's career. It just feels like it. I guess, Tara, I think we've done enough damage tonight. Hopefully, we'll be talking again next week about some good Cardinal wins that we have seen the last couple of weeks. And who knows, maybe even a first place Cardinal team. Dare to dream. But for Tara Wellman, I'm Daniel Shuptoff. Good night.
Hey Cardinals fans, thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.